whenever I come to Earth, I listen to BBSRadio.com. Hello, everybody. This is Andy Lopez. You're listening to Don't Panic, It's Organic. On today's show, 16 ways how to kill all living beings on the planet within 100 years. That's right. Be right back. Hello.
Good morning, Andy. It's time for you to start your radio show. Have a good one.
Thank you. Bye. Bye. Now, this latest version of how to kill all living beings on the planet within 100 years, I have revised it. I brought it up to date. I keep finding things. And then I also found out that they're actually, I'm talking about something the scientists agree upon, and it's called planetary boundaries. Did you know that there are 9 planetary boundaries? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 10. Well, there are 10 boundaries on this chart here. And let's see, the first one is particle pollution of the atmosphere. Then we have chemical pollution. We have climate crisis, ocean acidification, ozone depletion. We have the nitrogen cycle. The added one that I didn't know about was called the phosphorus cycle, which makes sense. Fresh water use, deforestation, and biodiversity loss. So let me just go over these. It turns out that I'm actually touching on almost each one of them. And then I had originally started off as 10 ways, and then I've been adding to it, and it was 24 ways, and then I just recently revised it down to 16 ways. Basically, I count nuclear power as one way, as opposed to the whole bunch of them I'll show you right now. So, and basically, this is things that we should not be doing, but are doing anyways, okay? And the chart comes from Wikipedia, and it's also, if you just look it up, by planetary boundaries, there are plenty of articles, scientific articles, which point to the fact that human race is going to kill itself if it crosses all these, if it keeps crossing these boundaries and going further and further. That's why there's a boundary. Let me go over them with you, okay? And these are not in order of importance. You can shake them all up and mix them up, and you still get the same results. The first one is nuclear power. So I wrote, build nuclear power plants with current methods. They should be using thorium instead. Look it up. Because of radioactive waste and everything that's producing, but the real reason why they're doing that is for weapons. So I have here, store waste in pools out back. To be sure it will effectively kill, build it near a fresh water supply. It will leak, and if it isn't leaking already. Build nuclear plants near the ocean. Make sure it's on a fault line. Let it leak into the ocean. Build nuclear plants near big cities. Let it leak into the city. Build nuclear plants near your favorite farm belt. Radiate your food. What about nuclear waste? Sure, nuclear power is safe as long as you ignore the waste it produces. You can delay this by adding another 100 years, maybe, if you bury it in someone else's estate. No matter what you put it in, it will leak. Actually, every nuclear plant on Earth is already—it's leaking already. The nuclear radiation into our air, water, ocean, crossing all ecological boundaries. Life cannot live very long radiated. Item number 2: ignore the climate change warnings and drill in. First will come global warming, then it'll be followed by an ice age. I have talked about that before, how that works. And I'm happy to explain it again, but it's up there on my blog and on my past shows. The last global warming occurred when Europeans cut down most of their forests. It was called the medieval warming, which lasted around 500 years. It was followed by an ice age called the Little Ice Age. Little Ice Age was also, which also lasted around 500 years. You can look it up. It's a matter of record. That was without our current pollution deforestation rate. This time will last much longer. Again, I have gone over all of this. My blog, you can look in my blog, Climate Change and Next Ice Age.
Hi.
Item number three is build the Keystone Pipeline, believe it or not. 50 years. Actually, I give it 10 to 20 years, provided some terrorists don't blow it up first. Would be about right for it to burst all over up and down mid-America. Not only our land, but our water, and it's just kill. Actually, pipelines are bursting everywhere. Look at Canada, and look here in the United States. Canadian pipelines burst once a day. Over 300 acres have nothing living there. No trees, no birds, no insects. The Native Indians are saying everything is dead. The pipeline that burst in Arkansas was only 5 years old. Improvident land use is a perfect, it's what it's called, it's one of the boundaries, misuse of land. That basically means corporations take over land from the farmer, farmer moves to who knows where, corporation turns that land into a cash crop. Keystone Pipeline is a perfect example of improvident land use gone nuts. Even recent pipelines in the United States have burst. See Yellowstone and Yellowstone National Park. Okay, number four would be eat more GMO/GEO foods with pesticides in the gene, or almost everything you're eating is GEO unless it's certified organic. But soon there will be no certified organic anywhere. Only eat certified organic, as anything labeled natural may also be GEO. I have your GEO/GEO. GEO knows no boundaries, no physical barriers, and have already crossed several of the Earth's ecological barriers. What, you don't know what GEO is? Then you should read my article on, which is titled, Some GMOs Are Good, Some GMOs Are Bad. Under the GEO section, I have let Monsanto control GEO research. If not stopped within a few years, there will be no viable organic seeds, no plants, no trees, no flowers, no safe food. Nothing will reproduce due to Terminator technology built into the GEO. Terminator technology was developed so that farmers had to buy the seeds over and over again. They also knew that GEO pollen cannot be stopped from spreading around the world and pollinating other plants, and they too will become GEO. What they're not telling you is that it's only 95% efficient. Some of a percent, 95% of the time efficient. The other 5% does get pollinated. It is spread out. And what about humans? Will humans be able to reproduce? What about pets and other animals? Their food is GEO too. What about bees? Major die-off is part of that of that result. Also, on the GEO, I have here written GMO, GEO tech, only develops pest resistance to Roundup 2,4-Ds. They're then resistant to whatever pest is used to replace it, and so on. It becomes a never-ending cycle, stronger pesticides. Humans and all living things were not meant to eat pesticides. Recently, it was discovered that GMO, GEO cotton with BT was found in high concentrations in the soil and surrounding areas. Insects were becoming immune to BT. GEO tech developed super weeds, which are resistant to anything you throw at it. Again, you need to read my article on some GMOs are good, and some GMOs are bad. We are going down the wrong path in terms of banning GMOs. Lots of scientists are telling you that's not the right thing to do. GMOs are a very broad basis. GEOs is one of the subcategories of GMO, and that's what we need to regulate. GMO, Mother Nature does everything is genetically modified organisms. You're not a clone of your parents. You're actually genetically modified organisms. On top of that, we have been doing genetically modifying organisms for centuries. Everything you eat on the market now has been modified one way or another genetically through cross-pollination, through selective breeding, through somehow picking out the best crop and regrowing that. So we have to understand that. Again, please read that some GMOs are good and some GMOs are bad blog. Number five, I have keep eating microwave food. You are what you eat. The food that is microwaved is not food anymore. It's destroyed. Look it up. And on that level, keep the cell phones. Keep your cell phone on. Nothing like fried cells to ensure extinction. Electromagnetic radiation pollution is very bad. I have your number seven, sewer sludge in your compost equal heavy metals in your food. It was a wonderful idea to run a pipe underwater 3 or 4 miles out to sea and on the ocean floor and dump it there. Billions of gallons of human waste mixed with medicine of all types mixed with industrial waste is dumped every year along the world's coast. Okay. Heavy metal pollution is very bad. This type of pollution has already crossed several of Earth's ecological boundaries. Recently, just read several things interesting. One was on arsenic. Arsenic levels have shot through the roof in rice. Mercury level are shooting through the roof in fish. So you can see how the pollution has expanded already. And you can't be eating arsenic and mercury at levels like this. You can't. Number eight, I have kill every living thing that crosses your path on the highway and in the air. Millions of roadkill every month in the USA alone. Loss of, and I have here, fill in the blank. I had there are birds, deers. I wrote birds all. Birds, deers, rabbits, etc. Loss of animal biodiversity is very bad. Loss of insects biodiversity is very bad. Biodiversity, loss of biodiversity, period, is very bad. It's one of the boundaries that we have already crossed. Number nine, fish. Fish till there are no more fish or anything else we hunt or fish or otherwise kill. Loss of fish biodiversity is bad. Ocean acidification is very bad. It's one of the Earth's ecological boundaries that we have already crossed. Very bad. Number 10, plastic. Plastic does not decompose. Many forms small plastic beads, which algae grows on as well as absorbs radiation and medicine, and will last forever. The whale was found dead when they did an autopsy. It was found to be full of plastic. Birds and sea animals are dying of hunger while their stomachs are full of plastic. Right here, of plastic. Sorry, I didn't get that done. Running at the same time. Fishes are being found that have plastic in them and we're eating it. There's a recent study found that fishes are at least, they're finding more and more fishes with more and more plastic in them. Number 11 is blow yourself up with a nuclear bomb or two. Maybe I should put that under nuclear power. That's a little different. This probably has to do with war. War. I'm going to write war. Number 12, I have smoke cigarettes and make other smokers second, third, and fourth hand smoke. Did you know that? There's second. Most people know there's second hand smoke, but there's also third hand smoke and fourth hand smoke. Not how many hands you have, it's what levels the stuff sticks around. That's a pollute your body. I'm going to write here, pollute your body more. Okay, number 13, pollution of clean water is bad. Fresh water use, or rather its misuse, is one of the Earth's ecological boundaries we have crossed. Bad. That goes back down to, I would say, sea keystone, right? And sea oil. Right? Oh, how about sea fracking? That's even better. The fracking. I guess my computer doesn't like fracking. Okay. Number 14, air pollution. Air pollution is very bad. Also, depletion is one of the Earth's ecological boundaries we have already crossed. Number 15 is require us to drink fluorinated water. I know we've gone over that before. But you're not meant to be ingesting fluoride. Figure it out. That's why they tell you don't swallow your fluoridated toothpaste. Number 16, require us to install the new Wi-Fi meters in every home. These are electromagnetic pollution. Bad. Number 17, of course, ozone depletion is very bad, which I have covered once here before. Ozone depletion. And that's where we're at right now. I'm sure that we're going to come up with more of them. If you have an idea of something I missed, please send email to andy@invisiblegarden.com. I'll be happy to add it to my growing list of ways to kill all people on the planet. Now, originally I had titled Ways to Kill All People on the Planet, but we tend to take everybody down with everything down with us, so it's now all living beings. Hello, everybody. This is Andy Lopez, and you're listening to Don't Panic, It's Organic on Invisible Gardener Radio Network. Don't go away. We'll be right back. The song that you're listening to in the background is called Lovers. Just wrote it last night, and then when we're done with the show, I'll play the whole thing entirely. You can download it for free off of my SoundCloud page, and if you want to buy it, there's a little link there to show you how to get it. Okay, so today we have a couple of things we're talking about. The first thing is we have a fungus problem. So I've gotten quite a few emails from folks all having the same problem. A fungus, I say a fungus among us. So there's a fungus and on there fill in the plants. Some people have funguses on their squashes, some people have funguses on their tomato plants, and quite a few people seem to have a fungus on their oak tree. So let's go over why plants have funguses in the first place. I mean, it's another thing to, you know, there are different names of different types of funguses, and we all know that. Well, the treatment's all going to be the same, so I'm going to go over to you why they have fungus in the first place, so you understand, and then we can work from there. So all bacteria have a purpose in life, okay? So they take advantage of the situations that are provided for them, and they take their best opportunity to thrive. So all bacteria need a host that's weak enough for them to invade and use that host sources as their own, okay? So the funguses require the host to be deficient in trace minerals. So all throughout my, I didn't say throughout my life, but all throughout my last quite a few years now, but basically through all this show that we've been doing and the column that I'm writing and everything, I talk about the Brix levels. I talk about the greater the higher the Brix level, the higher the mineral levels. How the mineral levels affect how insects seed the plants, whether it's a food source for them or not. And basically, insects have evolved into a system of being able to tell when a plant is low in minerals. And you know, it's not that the insect is saying, oh, well, that plant is low in minerals, so it'd be food for me. It looks at it and goes, wow, that's a food source. For whatever reason, it's a good food source, see? And so what happens is that when a plant is low on minerals, it's also high on simple carbohydrates. So the higher the mineral levels, the higher the Brix level. There's an order to it. Let me see if I get it straight. So the way it works is that, so I tell people, the higher the Brix, the higher the minerals. So it's really the other way around. It's really the higher the minerals. So the more minerals you have, assortment of minerals, because you need assortment of one mineral, two minerals is not enough. There's 76 different trace minerals your body, but plants need. So the higher the trace minerals, the higher the level of the trace minerals, the higher would that Brix level would be. And also, of course, also too, in relation to the higher Brix level, of course, the higher the Brix level, the higher the sugar levels are. See, and when we talk about sugar, we're talking about carbohydrates. There are different types of carbohydrates, simple carbohydrates, and complex carbohydrates. So the way it works is that there's a chain reaction. They're all correlated together. But let's just try to explain to you the process of the way it works, because it's not like in order to say high BRICS level, right? So in order for a plant to get to the high BRICS level, which is the result you want, high BRICS level, there are certain things you have to do to raise the high BRICS level, okay? So one of them is to increase the mineral levels of the plants. How do you do that, right? So what we're talking about is that the higher the BRICS, the higher the mineral levels will also be. The higher will be the complex carbohydrate level. Okay, so the insects can digest simple carbohydrates. They're not so good at digesting complex carbohydrates. So if you were to, that's why I always tell people, the greater the stress, the greater the pest or the disease will be. Same thing with humans, but with plants. Another way I say it is that if it's food for the insects, it's not food for us. So if it's food for the insect, means that it's high in simple carbohydrates. It's not what we want. We want it high in minerals. High in simple carbohydrates, low in minerals. We want it high in minerals and low in simple carbohydrates and high in complex carbohydrates. So when it's food for us, it means that it's high in minerals, bugs don't like it. Food for them means it's low in minerals, they love it. And the bugs are the second cause of disease spreading. Humans are first. And believe it or not, humans spread disease all over the place, not just diseases for humans, but plants, plant diseases as well. The insects do a lot of spreading also. Probably they're number one, but I'm just emphasizing what humans do. Okay, so humans love to give plants high nitrogen, okay? So high nitrogen is bad for the plants. Why? Okay, so high nitrogen interferes with the absorption of trace minerals in plants. Simple, okay? So I sprayed a property the other day, and the customer called me up the very next day saying she did not see any immediate results. So I told her, first off, when you first start to take vitamin B, you will not get immediate results either. And also, you also need to get a good meal, as vitamin pills were never meant to take the place of proper eating habits. And that's also true for the garden. So as with humans, the higher the stress, the greater the pest or disease would be. So it's as simple as that. And so high nitrogen will cause a lot of stress to the plants. It causes them to rapidly grow at the expense of the uptake of minerals. It's a fact that high nitrogen stops plants from absorbing trace minerals. So instead of stop plants, let's say it interferes with the absorption of trace minerals. Yeah, you get some trace minerals absorptions, but not as much as if the high nitrogen wasn't there. So the rapid growth of the plants produces a wide variety of effects. So not only does it interfere with the absorption of minerals, but in the first absorption of several of the important ones that are needed and controlling of the funguses, which is calcium and a variety of other exotic trace minerals. Okay? They're called trace minerals, so they need to be in low trace minerals. So funguses love plants that have been fed high nitrogen and that are weak and low in trace minerals. So that's how the bacteria has learned to evolve when it's time, because that's basically the right time for the fungus to get to spread. And so it's important to understand that relationship, which is what I try to get across to people, is that, and there are other factors too that will determine the funguses on the plant. Genetics is one of them. You have cultural, then you have genetics. Cultural being, of course, what you're doing to the soil. The health of the soil is very important, since diseases start in the soil. If it's not there, it ain't going to spread to your plant. The good guys and bad guys don't live in the same place, you know, all that stuff. And so the soil, what you do to the soil, how you use compost, how you remineralize the soil. You know, but you do have to put what you get out what you put in. So the one customer I read somewhere, a person said that she was giving a compost workshop, talked about, you know, the microbes in the soil and all that stuff and how to make compost. And one person asked about rock dust. Shouldn't you be adding rock dust to the compost so you can have minerals? And the lady said, no, the minerals are already in the soil. I wasn't there to talk to the lady, because I would have said, well, what happened? What about soil depletion? Because you do take it out and you do have to put it back in again. And that's what rock dust comes in. So you want to add rock dust to your soil production. So that's cultural. You want to increase the minerals as well as the bacterial. And if you don't do that, if you have dead soil, right, and you have weak plants, because the plants come from genetically inferior seeds, you want to always grow from the best organic heirloom seeds you can grow, right? Otherwise, they will be genetically inferior, and they will be dependent on pesticides and fungicides to control them, because they don't have the natural system there to help them. Okay, so, and the same thing with the tree, okay? So the trees are a little bit different. So the bottom line is, if you have a plant or tree that has a fungus, you have a stressed-out plant, and you need to find the stress. Remove the stress, and then proceed to solve the problem, okay? So with a tree, like an oak tree, these oak trees were getting overwatered, or they usually have something else that causes them to get stressed out. Figure out what that is. Usually, is they're not getting their minerals that they're getting, so they're getting stressed out from not getting the source of minerals that they normally would get. Figure out what's wrong with that system, and give them the minerals they need, whether or not you provided the rock dust, put it in the compost. Mother Nature, you're Mother Nature. We are Mother Nature. We have to give them the things that they're used to getting through normal process. When animals come and die, the bones fall apart, the poop provides bacteria and the minerals. Those things are not happening anymore. We need to do that. So with the trees, you have to pay attention to what you're feeding, or in this case, what you're not feeding. So that's an important aspect of fungus control, is that weak plants, fungus. Healthy plants, no fungus. You have to control watering, overhead watering. You know, so if you have high heat, usually what's going on now is that you're getting high heat and people are watering a lot, and then that's also a perfect condition for fungus. There are many natural things that you can use for fungus control. Okay, so some of them, most of them, you know, you should learn the process of doing it. They're not that easy to do, a lot of them aren't, because you have to, you know, overdo it. So one of the easiest way is to learn to use compost tea. Compost tea works great as long as you make the compost properly. Again, if your compost does not have the trace minerals in it, your compost tea won't be as effective. Compost tea won't be as effective if it doesn't have the microbes in it, the living organisms that are supposed to be in it. Won't be as effective. Therefore, when you make compost, you have to use some type of animal manure. I use 5 different types of animal manure. The more the better, because you have different types of microbes that come with each one of them. And you do want to provide the rock dust to the microbes. Let the microbes go at the rock dust, and then that process, you get that. It's what you spray out. That's what you're spraying. Then it works. Okay? Okay, so that's pretty much going to cover the fungus problem for today. Remember, if you have a question, you send it to Andy@InvisibleGardener.com. It would also enter you into the monthly contest. If you remember already, you will get this month we're getting the grower's kits. You're going to get that. It's $100 value. But if you're not a member, then you automatically will get a lifetime membership. You would win a lifetime membership. And actually, let me make that clear. What happens is that you would get a lifetime membership for a dollar. I have to charge something through the store because I haven't figured out how to give the membership for free. There's no way to do it for free on the store, on my online store. Otherwise, I would have a code that you can say, enter this, you get it free. It doesn't work. I tried it. So lifetime membership is $20 a lifetime. So if you want to get it for a dollar, you email me, say, Andy, I'd like to get your lifetime membership for only a dollar. That way, I'll send you a code back that lets you get it for a dollar. So basically, you're winning the $19 discount. Okay. So when you enter in the contest, everybody who enters into the contest can get. Just have to say, I would like a dollar lifetime membership, please. And that's your content, then you would win. Okay, so you're an automatic winner. Everybody's an automatic winner who enters the contest to get it at a dollar. At the same time, we do a drawing to see who gets the grower's kit. Okay? All right. Then, on another subject, I talk quite often about water and water use, how to control water, how to save water. So one of the things I've been talking about for years is using gray water, and that's very important nowadays even more. And there are many kits on the market now that you can buy that allows you to hook up your gray water system. It depends how elaborate you want to do it. There are a variety of simple kits, and many cities now, especially here in California, are allowing you to do a very simple gray water kit without a permit. And there are lots of new constructions now. The homes are going to be with the gray water system in. It's basically a very simple valve that you can turn on and off that you can say, okay, I'm going to channel the showers, I'm going to channel the sink water, right, the bath, everything in the kitchen that drains out. You can have it filter through or whatever and go out to your garden. And lots of different ways when it goes out to the garden how you can use it. You can go right into a little pond that you're watering with, or right into tanks that you then water it out, or go right into the garden. So there are lots of different rules and regulations you want to follow with that, and how to keep, you want to learn how to, you have to understand that the gray water is going onto the ground, therefore you have to be organic in how you shower, and be careful with the soaps you use, and the chemicals you use in the house for that water when it goes out again. Okay, so otherwise you will be destroying the soil that water goes to. But the gray water is a very excellent way to do it. Just type in gray water systems for the home. Google, you'll see that lots of different companies out there makes it available to you. And that would make a big difference, because they say that if everybody was to using gray water, it would be as if they had a desalination of plants in process, because that's how much water we can save through gray water. But there's still lots of water can be saved by not wasting water. Okay, so then on another subject, I've also been talking about being careful with planting drought-tolerant plants. Not all drought-tolerant plants are beneficial to whatever country, wherever state you're in. My state would be California. So there are lots of invasive plants which are also drought tolerant, which people are planting, but they should not be planting, because these are invasive plants that do more damage to the environment than they do good, because they harm the ecology, the economy, and human health. A lot of them are poisonous to animals and all kinds of creatures. They take over things, and you do not want to plant them. One of them would be the highway ice plant. So you don't want to be planting that one. It's actually called, let's see, what is the name of the highway? It's called highway ice plant. It's called Protus edulis. Okay, so it's called highway ice plant. It's real pretty. It has its flowers, but it won't stop growing. It will cover everything. Okay, so you probably don't want to plant that. And then there are also tall grass. Pampas grass is something you do not want to plant. It's not only invasive because they outcompete native plants. They're self-seeded, but they also you can't eat them. They cause you all kinds of cuts. They'll cut you, and animals can't use it. So it's really, really bad to have. And yeah, it'll go through the route, but if nothing else, it kills everything else around. So we want to be careful with what we plant. Here are a list of, here's, for example, some of the plants you should avoid planting. And you, if your nursery sells it, you should tell them these are invasive plants that should not be planted. The Mexican feather grass is one of them. Periwinkles, Vinca major. Yeah, you know, that'll take over everything. Of course, you know, if you want to plant them and you want to make sure it doesn't get anywhere else, fine. You can leave it in your yard, but they will spread. So ground fountain grass, green fountain grass, Scotch broom, you don't want to plant fresh brooms. French broom, giant plant. They go real giant plants. There's pampas grass also too. So all these types of giant native grasses you don't want to be planting in the city. They're actually invasive plants. Then of course there's the highway ice plant. You don't want to be planting water hyacinths. Talk to the folks in Florida and see what happens if you plant water hyacinths. And there's yellow flag iris. You should just to name a few. And, you know, they're very bad to plant. The ice plant, for example, the ice plant is toxic to livestock. It kills livestock, for example. You know, it had overrun in California and ran all over the place. And they're in the process of trying to eliminate it now, so you don't really want to be buying it. So you need to be careful with the invasive plants. Okay, so I also tell people, look. You don't want to overdo it in buying, taking out natural plantings and planting native plants, because on top of that you have trees, and trees are not necessary native to here, and you do want to be able to water them. And then what happens when the rains come back and you have to switch over again? So you want to, you know, I suggest you just learn to reduce the water that you have by controlling waste. Control the wastewater, you know, all the water that you're leaking, you know, broken lines, stuff like that. Use your gray water. You may be surprised how much water, catch the rain, how much water you actually have that you don't have to make really major change, other than just be careful how you use the water. Hello, everybody. This is Andy Lopez, and you're listening to Don't Panic, It's Organic. The song in the background is called Luna. Available through my website, mysticalgardener.com. Just go to the music store. It's called Inner Gardening section. On today's show, I'm going to be answering a question, which is one of my favorite things to do, is answer questions. And so the question is, suppose I had disease issues this season. Is my store reusable next year, or should it be discarded? I paid to bring it all in, so I really would like to reuse it. How do you use sanitized soil to remove any disease or fungus? We have a very cold winter here that I assume would kill anything living in the soil. Is that correct? Someone clue me in, please. Says by David. Oh, hi, David. Okay, so here we go, and I'll do the best I can to cover it for you adequately without getting too confused. Okay, so if you have disease issues this year, and it's your soil reusable next year, okay, first of all, diseases affect different, there are different types of diseases which affect different plants. And so one of the ways you can reuse the soil is to know what plants are not affected by the disease. In other words, there's a couple ways. One, you can do soil rotation, or you can do plant rotation. There are a couple other ways, but these are two ways it comes up with that relative value without doing anything to the soil. So let's just say you were growing tomato plants, and they were diseased. And you're correct in saying that it's in the soil, because all diseases start in the soil. So let's say you have tomato plants, and they were diseased. Not a good idea to grow tomato plants next year in the same soil. I would grow something completely different. So corn, you can do all different kinds of greens, mustard greens, you can grow herbs. So there are lots of other things you can grow that won't be affected by the tomato disease, by the disease. Way you can control the soil a lot better than in the ground. So if you had a raised bed, you probably wouldn't be having the disease problem if you did it right, if you were to amend the soil properly, if the soil was alive with all the different natural bacteria. I have a saying, the good guys and the bad guys don't live in the same place. So that will not give it an opportunity for that disease to happen. And on top of that, raised beds, and you rotate through the raised beds growing different things. So if you grow tomato in one bed, you grow tomatoes in the next bed, and you rotate them around different things. Also, too, you can rotate the soil. You can take the soil out of the raised bed, run it through your compost system, put some new soil in it, not the same one, but you take the old soil, start composting it, run it through your compost system again. But you have some new compost that comes out, and that's the stuff you want to add to your raised bed. And you don't just put raised bed, straight compost in a raised bed. You want to which I will just take a quick note here, all right, pH. you can rotate the soil. That means you take everything out, put something in. You let it cook up, let it mellow. That you can also do in the ground, but it's much more effective in the raised bed. To do a green cover crop, that would be where you grow something, that you let it grow, and then you turn it over and let it decompose in the soil. So the last thing you want to do is, if you have the tomato, say you have diseased tomato in a raised bed or in the ground, the last thing you want to do is cut them up and turn them over in the ground, which would be spreading more of the disease. But if you had a disease in your raised bed and you peanuts, you can grow all kinds of things that you can then turn over, clover that you can turn over and let it. And what I would do is turn it over, add some horse manure, animal manure, turn it all over, add some compost to it, turn it over, cover it with a plastic bag, and then let it cook and let it mellow down before you use it. One of the things you can do with a raised bed is to cover the whole thing with a plastic bag and solarize it. I mean, you leave it like that for about a month, it will cook up and kill all the bad bacteria. It won't get but I don't recommend that so much because it doesn't really entirely work out as well. You don't entirely eliminate them. Because you really have to rotate the soil to get exposure, and the deep inside of the bed. pay attention to that. Pay attention to the health of your soil, because that's really the key to it. So that way you won't get the disease in the first place. Also, too, you know, you got to be careful when you buy plants. If you go to the nursery and you buy plants there, you're going to be bringing the disease in the soil to the plants. That's another good reason not to, you know, if you're going to be buying plants, to buy only organic seeds and organic plants, or even better, to grow your own from organic seeds, right? Then you know you have control of the soil. You see what I'm saying? So, using your raised beds is one of the best ways to do that. You can rotate your plants. You can rotate the soil. You can sanitize the soil. And it says, you know, the other part of your question is how do you sanitize soil to remove any diseases or fungus? We have very cold winter here, so I assume we kill anything living in the soil. Is that correct? No. Let's just go into hibernation until it gets warm enough, and they'll come right back again. So as I said before, you know, you can sanitize the soil, especially if it's in a raised bed, by the methods I explained, which would be you can cover it with a plastic tarp, so it speaks of the sunshine through it, not the black kind, the clear kind, so the sun shines through it, solarize it, but then you got to turn the soil over regularly to expose all aspects of it, right? You can rotate the soil, take the soil out, run it through your compost system. That will sanitize it right there. But by sanitizing, it means just killing off the bad bacteria by introducing more good bacteria. You can take the soil out and, you know, compost it. And when you do that, you want to add new compost, new soil to it. So be careful what soil you add. So make sure you add organic potting mix to your compost. Part of the scenario, too, part of the problem is that most people, when they make their compost, they don't make their compost correct, so that it doesn't get hot enough. It should be at least 170 degrees Fahrenheit, maybe 180, 190 degrees Fahrenheit, to kill off the bad bacteria. So if your compost is not heating correctly, you're just going to be passing the bacteria back again. You know, so in terms of sanitizing for a disease and fungus, you know, if you're doing in the ground and you can't, you know, rotate the soil and stuff like that, one of the best ways is to get raw manure. By raw, I mean as fresh as possible, horse manure, cow manure, rototill that into the soil, and then cover it with a black plastic to allow it to finish cooking and give it a couple of months' time. That will kill the bacteria, that will sanitize it by introducing all the good bacteria. And then when you're ready to grow, you can amend it by adding compost and turn the soil over and get it back in shape again. There are lots of different things you can spray, but I don't recommend them because they don't really last that long and they do more damage than good. And so the cold doesn't do it. So you want to be able to use one of these systems that I have explained to you. I'm assuming that you're not using a raised bed I think you would have mentioned that you were using a raised bed, right? So assuming you're not, so I would, you know, actually convert to using a raised bed. If you don't have a raised bed, and I would look at the ground and actually put a raised bed or two in that same place. You can grow seven times more food, have more control of the soil, more control of diseases in the soil, stuff like that. Okay. So I hope this helps you, and if you by sending email to me with subject in the email saying contest, you get entered into our monthly contest. So David, I think is his name, David, will be entered into our monthly contest. The winner of this month will get, and this will Gardner's Grower's Kit, which has 5 pounds of Invisible Gardener's Super Seed, 5 pounds of Invisible Gardener's Rock Dust Blend, and you're going to get a quart of the Super Seaweed, my microbiological activator. Just to talk a little bit about what we're talking about, diseases, is that, remember, all diseases are soil-borne diseases, but, and also really depends upon the pH of the soil, because of certain bacteria that eat, that live in that pH, and if that bacteria is missing, it will get mineral deficient. And also, what will happen if that bacteria is missing, some other type of bacteria will come and take its place, which is the fungus among us. And so The fungus is not set up to be providing nutrition to the plants. They're on their own, whereas there are other bacteria that that's actually what they do. So it comes back down to a trace mineral deficiency. So when you have a fungus on your plant, a disease, again, you don't mention what type of diseases. There are many different types of diseases. All of them can be cured by, first of all, paying attention to the health of the soil. Secondly, by paying attention to the health of the plant. Understand what Brix levels mean. The higher the Brix, the less the disease, the less the pest. Okay, so there's a reason for that. And so you want to increase the mineral levels of your plants. You do that through foliar application, which are instant. They'll absorb it right away. You can also knock out most diseases by increasing the calcium level of the plants. You find most calcium are not, most plants don't, that have fungus, are deficient in calcium. So milk is a great deterrent for diseases. Cup of milk, gallon of water will help. But you also really want to try to have increase all the other nutrients. I myself, that's why I invented Super Seaweed in 1956 to provide all the minerals. So that's what Super Seaweed does. It's a blend of different kinds of seaweed and all kinds of stuff from all around the world. And you spray that, provides all the minerals, raises the Brix, knocks out the fungus. And you have to spray it regularly because, remember, the fungus travels from the soil. So the other thing that I would suggest in terms of controlling the fungus among us, rock dust, compost, and mulch. So if you should apply a layer of rock dust once or twice a year. You should apply compost on a regular basis two or three times a year. It depends whether it's a garden, a vegetable garden. You do it quarterly. You also want to apply an acid mulch. So I would say if you have the disease, more likely the pH is off. By doing this and applying an acid mulch, the acid mulch will help to control the disease by reducing the pH down, and the acidic mulch itself can be made into a tea and spray. So if you use, like, for example, azalea gardenia mix, make a tea out of that and spray it, that would also help to control the diseases.
Okay, so this is Andy Lopez, Invisible Gardener. You've been listening to some of my past shows. For the rest of the year, I'm going to be doing a whole bunch of these past shows. I have over 40 years of past shows, so... And then starting in January, I have a whole new series of shows coming up. Basically, I'm going to do a chapter a month of my book. So it's going to be really cool. If you have the book, it's required. It's not required, but if you have the book, you can go with it with me. We can go through it together, and I'll go chapter by chapter and explain to everything. It'll be a great experience for everybody. Plus, we will have some guests, and as well as I'm going to be doing more shows from the past. And I think we have a few minutes, and if you are not getting my newsletter, please come to my website, invisiblegardener.com, and sign up to receive the newsletter. Automatically, you'll be able to, you can also join, since membership is free, by the way. I was listening to the shows, and these are old ones. So right now, membership is free. Just go up there and sign up for free. You get access to all of my books, as well as my Don't Panic, It's latest one, Don't Panic, It's Organic. They're all in PDF format. But you can buy the book from Amazon or any place the book is available. But the PDF, it works just fine. You can read it on your computer, and we can do the show together. Let's see, what time is it? So coming up is the and of course, if you you should get my podcast. If you don't have the podcast by now, you should have the podcast for this show. You can also get the podcast for my cosmic spaceship. And you can get the podcast here on VBSRadioShow.com, or you can get the podcast if you happen to be on my website, invisiblegardener.com. Just click on podcasts. Next week, I'm going to be doing three more. The rest of the year until January, every show, you're going to be hearing some of my past hits. I have 40 years of shows. I'm going to go through and pick the best ones. Some people I've interviewed, and lots and lots of really good information crammed in there. I might even do my Dances with Ants show. I did four of them. It's all about natural ant control. Probably do that, but that'll take a whole month right by itself, right? If I do each one of them is an hour long. I might do that somewhere along the line next year, you know, just have the four shows for 1 month. And what I love doing is turning into an online class so we can talk about it. And that's going to be happening next month. And hopefully I have a few people I've invited to be on the show, and lots of things going on. We are moving into a video world, so you're going to be seeing some video shows. This whole radio show, audio is going to be changed into a video format. That way I can show you what I did for the week, because that's one of the things I want to do, is I want to show you the on-the-job stuff that I do. Plus, I do videos as well from my cosmic spaceship, because I create videos of the song. And I have a great couple of drones. I'll take you up in the air, show you some of the farms, some of the things I'm doing, and that way I can interact with everybody, see? So all that's coming up, and we're moving right along, and the folks here at BBS Radio is moving right along, and everything's happening. I think we have another 2 minutes, and I'm sitting here trying to think of which song I should start the music with, because I've been creating some really, really cool, amazing, interesting stuff that I think you might like. So I'll be back next week, and then in the beginning of January, we'll have a whole new set of shows coming up for you. So let me see what this is. I told you I was working on some new stuff, didn't I? Okay, everybody, take care now. We'll be on. I'll see you next week. If I'm busy, I'll probably just put on some of the shows, but I think you will like the new shows coming up. I just wrote this a couple of days ago. I haven't even heard it yet.